Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. Today, we witness the last rush from rebellion. Stories of You Say You Want a Revolution. First, featured storyteller Whitney Rearick finds her rebel spirit rise in a manufactured housing crisis.
Hi. How I got here. When I graduated college in 1991, there was a big recession then too, and all my friends were struggling getting jobs, and so I didn't even bother trying. My college roommates had plastered the wall in our apartment with their rejection letters from jobs they'd applied for. It wallpapered the whole wall. So I decided instead to join Vista. And I wound up in, I wanted to go to a very exotic place, someplace warm, someplace unique, someplace, you know, really different than where I'd grown up in suburban New Hampshire. And so I went to a very exotic location called Utah. And so I was a Vista volunteer there, and then squandered a few more years of my 20s rowing boats, and I joined AmeriCorps, which is just like Vista. And after a few years there, having one hell of a good time, I decided it was time to get serious about a career. I'd heard about them. They sounded like a good idea. And so I applied for jobs and got one in Salt Lake City, working for an organization called Utah Issues. And it's otherwise known as Utah Tissues, because we are a bunch of bleeding hearts. And I was the housing department. And so my job, as my executive director put it, was to solve the affordable housing crisis in Utah. And he handed me a Rolodex and said, go for it. I can't babysit you. You can do this. And I said, okay. Now, the rest of my friends were off. Not my friends, but my colleagues were off doing this thing called the dot-com boom, something about creating content. And here I was working for $23,000 in Salt Lake City, Utah, a suburban New Hampshire girl, lobbying the Utah legislature. So I started in November, and by January I was already up at the Utah legislature lobbying on affordable housing issues. Now, the reason I got that job was that I had started a Habitat for Humanity chapter in Moab, which, by the way, failed miserably. But but no problem. They didn't know about that. So I got this job. They didn't know about the failure part. There's a job tip. Don't tell them if the thing you started failed. But so there I am in Salt Lake City lobbying. Before you know it, I'm sitting in these committee hearings across from these rural Utah legislators, these older white gentlemen, and here I am, like, just this girl in my thrift store clothes and fresh from rowing boats and doing good deeds in Moab, and I'm like, oh man, holy cow. And sure enough, a bill comes up, House Bill 24, and my fellow advocates, there were quite a few of them, they were in that Rolodex that I had been given, said, you know, this is a good bill. You need to go lobby on this. And I said, okay, this is a good bill. I need to lobby on this. Okay, all right. So I sat there and I lobbied for this bill. And the bill, House Bill 24, was there to protect the rights of homeowners, specifically mobile homeowners, the owners of mobile homes. So trailer park residents. And what had been happening is some people were getting evicted for very arbitrary reasons, and they'd be given only 15 days' notice to be out of there. So the way the law had worked is it said if the owner of the park says, you need to fix these problems, you need to paint your railing, or even legitimate things like fix the plumbing, but if you don't do it, you've got 15 days and you're out of there. Now, think about that for a second. You got to pick up a whole house and move it. Now, because it was that dot-com boom and everything, there was no place to move it. You know, there was no vacancy. There was a very low vacancy rates in everything in Utah at the time. So they had no place to move their trailers to. So it was rough. But, you know, there were a handful of these things were happening. So a legislator proposed this bill to extend the period of evictions to 60 days and give people more time to move their homes. Now, I'm just going to say, this is a version of the American dream, right? The American dream is to own your own home. And that's what people were doing. They bought their own homes. And so often they were older homes, and they'd invested a lot emotionally in them and financially for them and kept them going. They're really charming places and, you know, landscaped, great places, but they were facing these, you know, some people were facing these evictions. So we lobbied on this bill, and I sat there and I said, come on, you guys, you got to go for it. And the Utah legislature listened to all of us advocates who were lobbying for this bill and passed the bill. Yay! All right. My first success. All right. A few months into it, I'm feeling really good. I'm psyched. So time goes on, and the bill had an effective date of May 5th. May 6th, trailer and manufactured housing owners all over the state, and there were like 2,000 mobile homeowners, but a few hundred of them on May 6th got eviction notices. And what we had done inadvertently was created a no-cause eviction. So in trying to close one loophole, we opened up another. And so I started getting phone calls. And because one of the parts of my jobs was, because the legislature ends in March in Utah, and so I would get these phone calls. Normally they'd be like, oh, hey, you know, my landlord wants to raise the rent, what should I do? Or I want to have a cat, what should I do? Or my landlord thinks that I have a roommate, but really I'm a cross-dresser. That was my favorite one. He was great. Anyway, so that really happened. And what do you tell the guy, you know? But anyway, but I started getting these phone calls from manufactured housing owners who were like, oh my God, I didn't do anything wrong. All that's happened is I've lived here forever, but I'm on a month-to-month lease, and now I got this eviction notice, and I have to be out in 60 days. What do I do? And I said, I don't know. So I, panicked for a little while, and made some phone calls and panicked some more and talked to my fellow advocates. Now I should say a few words about my fellow advocates. A lot of them had been around there for a long time. They've been at this for 20 years, 30 years. A lot of them were older than me. They were baby boomers and had been sort of hippies in the 60s and were doing good deeds and still going for it. And we were kind of the rebels because we were in this very conservative state, and we were there advocating for, let's face it, progressive causes. So we were kind of the cadre of rebels, and so we got together and we had a public meeting, and in Magna, Utah, a very low-income area, we had a public meeting in a gymnasium one rainy weeknight after people started getting eviction notices, and the atmosphere was electric. People were angry. They wanted answers. And I had to stand in front of all these people just saying, what happened? How did this pass? How did you let this happen? And I just had to say, I don't know. We'll do something. I don't know what. And I remember getting in my car after that and driving back to my cute little bungalow apartment. And I just, in my car, just weeping, just going, oh, my God, this is too much. I don't know how people do this. How can you be an organizer? This is the hardest job in the world. I've got 300 people who are looking at me to ask me what to do. I don't know. All I know is that the next legislative session is the following January, and these people are going to be out in 60 days. So I talked to my fellow rebels, my fellow organizers, and they all say, there's nothing we can do. The only thing that could happen is we could have a special session to reverse the law, and the Utah legislature will never do that. They don't care about poor people. They just don't. They don't care about poverty. What they care about is gay clubs and abortion. And those are the kind of things that they had special sessions before, and they said, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. Just give up now. And I said, well, what if we talk to the park owners? They've got to have a sympathetic ear. I was pretty new and really idealistic, and so I was like, oh. well, let's talk to the people who are putting these people out. Why don't we? And they're like, oh, God, you're so naive. Don't do that. So I'm like, okay, all right. But you know what? We had to. That was the only option. There was nothing else we could do. So I talked to my fellow homeowners association folks. They were almost as naive as me. And we said, well, we got to talk to the park owners. So we did. And we sat down with the park owners. And again, there I am in my thrift store clothes, sitting across another table with a bunch of men in really expensive suits, the paid lobbyists for the park owners. And they said, yeah, let's get a special session. We'll support that. We need to do the right thing. This is bad. And we went, really? Are you sure? You're supposed to be the bad guys. All my fellow advocates over here are telling me you're the bad guys. Okay. So we talked to the governor, and the governor said, okay, we'll have a special session. And we had a special session for the poverty issue. I mean, for people who live in mobile home parks. I mean, that's the least sexy issue, really, right? So we had this special session, but still there's no guarantee it's going to pass. And so it was very nerve-wracking. And for the first time, I got to sit on the House floor in the Utah legislature. And I was invited in by the bill's sponsor, and I sat there, and I got to see the members of the Utah House at eye level debate this bill. And the debate centered around property rights issues, because whose property rights are more important here? The homeowner, because, you know, that's the American dream, owning a home. Or are the property rights of the park owners more important? So this debate happened. It was nerve-wracking. We've got hundreds and hundreds of people's lives and their homes on the line, and so it's just like, oh, it's going to happen. But I'm happy to say that it passed, and it passed on a 2/3 majority that it needed to reverse the bill, and it passed unanimously in the Senate. House Bill 24 was reversed, and it's one of the best things I think I've ever done. And I'll just say that what you got to no, I mean every best. Thank you. I guess the lesson is sometimes you're rebelling against your fellow rebels. Sometimes your enemies can be your allies too. That's all.
Get your story on tonight. April 18th, join us at the Story Story Studio, a new free workshop series held on the third Monday of every month to bring out your voice with true stories from real experiences. Tonight's session, To the Page, gets your story down on paper and is taught by Elizabeth McKetta. Join us from 7 to 9 p.m. at Colmar Coffee House in Bodo and enjoy the thrill of story power. Next, story slammer Emily Walton revolutionizes an inherited status of too cool for school.
This is all because of Annie back there. Thank you, Annie. She was like, you go tell your story. My name is Emily Walton. I grew up in southern Idaho, and I grew up in a family. I was the oldest of 10 kids, and the way I like to describe it is religious separatists, because I think that's the easiest way to describe it. So I was homeschooled, spent a lot of time babysitting, never had a driver's license, never had a social security number, never went to school, never went to the doctor. So my life sucked. That's the way I like to describe it. And I should have prefaced this whole thing with, I love my family. So it's one of those stories. So I left at 17, moved away to California with my boyfriend because my family believed the world was going to end, and that sounded pretty bad to me. And so, I mean, have the fun while you can, right? So I moved to California. Through many years of work, I finally got a social security number. You try walking into a social security office, telling them you have no medical records, no school records, and see what they'll do. It's really difficult. So got that worked out. Hard to get a job without a social security number. Finally got that. I ended up moving back up to Idaho about 10 years ago, got a driver's license. So things were going well. I kind of had a life, and I was working. But the biggest rebellion that I did was I went to college, And the reason it was a rebellion for me is because it was really bad to go into debt for our family and the way my family saw it. And so you guys know, if you want to go to college before you're 24, you have to be emancipated from your family to get federal loans. So if you ever go into that FAFSA thing and you fill it out and you're under 24, hope your parents have paid taxes, because mine didn't, so I couldn't go to college before that. So I got loans and got my GED. That was in 2006. So that was my rebellion. I went to college, and and I can remember calling my parents and telling them I was going to college, and I said, why can't you be happy like other parents? Other parents beg their kids to go to college. And my parents since then have turned around. There's been a huge change in their viewpoint, in my viewpoint, in my younger brothers and sisters' viewpoint. I'm now a senior at Boise State University. I love college. Yeah. And my income earning potential has risen significantly. Significantly. One really ironic part of this story is I got a job at Social Security Administration. about 2 years ago, and it was a good job. They were going to offer me full-time great pay once I graduated, but I ended up rebelling against that too and quit it a couple months ago because it's not what I wanted to do. So hooray to you guys who are leaving those jobs you don't want to do to go and do what you want to do. That's perfect. I love that. How do I want to end this? Well, I want to say that because of the courage that I had to step out and go into debt to go to college has made it so that my younger brothers and sisters now want to go to college. And I take them to Boise State every time I can, and I show them the opportunities I've had, and it's changing things. So if there's something that you think you need to do, you should do it, because it will change other people's lives too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Story Story Night is brought to you by presenting partner the Boise State Story Initiative, venue partner the Lennon Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for a podcast teaser for our April 25th and first anniversary show, Coming of Age. Learn more at storystorynight.org.